Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Extended intro. And the fading is better this time. And the reprise! That's enough. So it's the Dark Place Dreamers! Yay! The best episode yet! I'm very excited. Welcome to episode 12 of Dark Place Dreamers. This time I'm going to introduce the people. It's myself, the Dean, and I'm joined by Dark Place Robert.
How are you getting on, everyone?
I'm hyper and excitable. I don't know about the listeners. And do you know that this is episode 12? That means we have now done as many episodes of Sandman as we did Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Is this episode 12?
We did six of Garth Marenghi, and we've just done six of Sandman.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
So this is, interestingly, we've done the same amount already. Now, we've got obviously more Sandman to go. But it went quicker, I think. It doesn't feel that we've doubled our episodes. Yeah.
I guess we're just powering through it, and as well as that, I don't know.
They're also longer episodes, so it's interesting.
They're longer episodes. Maybe it's because I know more about the source material than you do this time around, so it's all new to you.
Maybe that's why. Yeah.
I don't know.
Plus, Garth Marenghi was like, oh, this is a 20-minute episode, and weird things happen. I can't take any more of this for another week. So it was an interesting vibe.
Yeah, I did need to decompress after it. A lot of the weird stuff that happened in that series. This is a lot more straightforward, and it's within my comfort zone. And it's all fantasy stuff. So it's definitely my cup of tea. But it's not... You don't like fantasy.
No, that's why I love today's episode. There wasn't really as much mumbo-jumbo nonsense in today's episode. There wasn't a lot of fantasy. There wasn't a lot of, oh, suddenly we're in Star Wars on a bridge with debris floating behind us and laser CGI. It's just like, hey, what if we take some people and we let them do people things?
So, yeah, the episode is broken down into two stories, I'd say. This used to be two comic books.
Right.
But they've kind of just smacked them together because they kind of fall under the same theme. And they kind of just slotted together quite nicely. So there's two storylines. There's one following the Dream and his little sister. Specifically, it is his little sister. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the second story of the Dream and this other person who cannot die. Hobbs. Oh, what's his surname? He changes the name a few times, but it's Hobbs Gosling or something? Gosling?
Was his name not Robert Gatley?
He changed his name.
Yeah, he did. And he was Sir at one point, and he made me think of Robert Dudley, which was Elizabeth I's friend, stroke possible suitor, stroke possible lover.
But it is just interesting because it's a very normal story with a single magical exception.
Yeah, so I think that's what worked for me. So let's point out that we have great, great conversational scenes with the Raven and his sister, with the Raven and his would-be friend. Sorry, not with the Raven, with the Dream. And the point I'm trying to make is the Raven's not there. Sorry. So the Dream is talking to these people and we're having these lovely conversations and the Raven is not there.
And that's your favorite part of this episode.
My favorite part is that he's not there. I mean, let's be honest. some of these scenes were very good, and the dialogue was great, and the acting was great, and the Raven would have ruined them.
Oh, there's no American accents in it.
Ah, hold on. Well, there we go.
How villainous of you. Yeah, the Raven doesn't make an appearance, but again, the Raven's more of a comical character.
Yeah, should he's have trash.
Always been a comic. He would have ruined a lot of the somber, more... What is it? The Raven is just more of a conduit for us to make a connection to the dream. Whereas now we have other people who are talking.
I don't know. I heard that plenty of 15-year-old emo girls already felt a connection to the dream. They did not need a Raven.
I don't know. Sorry, without the Raven, he would have been walking around hell and we would have just watched this very somber person walking around. You do need somebody to give a little bit of exposition to. You can just talk to yourself.
Well, look, let's talk about what happened. We've got two stories. One's 20 minutes roughly and one's 30 minutes roughly. First one is with his sister. So he's in the park. Well, we don't know it's his sister initially. So he's in the park and some people are playing football and we're in England. And he's just this mopey little goth kid beside the city hall. Like, he's sitting there and he's all black with his little bread, throwing it to the pigeons. And he's moping around. He's like, no, everything's terrible. Mommy and daddy won't let me have a new Xbox. And he's just so mopey. And then this really attractive lady comes over and sits beside him and talks to him. And initially, we don't know that they know each other. And they sort of hide that for a minute or two. And she asks how he is, and he's like, everything's terrible. And then she puts his hand on his knee, and I'm like, ho-ho, has he pulled? And then she's like, God damn it, little brother, you're so whiny and pathetic. And then it's his big sister. No, little sister, sorry.
Little sister,
and
yeah.
He is, he gets told off for being whiny and pathetic. And for, you know, you got your amulet and your ruby and your sand, and now you don't know what to do, so you're sitting around the park moping. And she says, come with me and, we'll see a world of imagination. I can't remember the rest of the lyrics from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. But
you're also disgusted at the fact that he had not seen Mary Poppins.
He had not seen Mary Poppins. They mentioned that. So that almost got the show cancelled. But yeah, he's he is what he is. But she's happy and cheerful compared with him.
Yeah, no, it's very much... you were giving off that she's... doesn't have the scythe and the hood and the skeletal features and all that stuff, but it's very much more a Terry Pratchett-esque
death, yeah, so we, she's the Grim Reaper, yeah,
the kindness, like, of the, yeah,
it's okay as long as they do it once where they mention it, you know, and that's what they should have done. Just once, she should be like, well, I'm off to go get a new scythe and hood or something. Just you got to throw in that little Easter egg of that little mentioning, like, you know, oh, I'm dressed like a really attractive girl today because my hood is in and cloak are in the laundry. Like, you've just got to somewhere have a scythe in the corner of the room, anything. You've got to play on the caricature somewhere.
I mean, the entire point, they go through this theme that people... you know, they're terrified of death and they embrace Dream, and Dream is the more weird of the two of them, whereas she's very kind and whatever, so it's kind of this ironic turn of events.
Well, but she seems like a normal person compared with him.
She's lovely, like a lot of the things just yeah.
So, the first time I realize that she is death is when she says, look, let's listen to this guy playing violin. Was he playing Schubert? Anyway, he's playing something on the violin, and she brings him up to see it, and it's lovely. And she says to him, "Do you know who I am?" And he immediately realizes that she's deaf, and then the old man playing the violin is deaf. And then she repeats, you know, similar scenes with other people, and it's a couple on their honeymoon, and it's all these kind of things, and it's kind of sad, but they all just go along with it. And as soon as they see her, they know that she's deaf, except for the one kid. And the one kid says, oh, did you see? I almost got hit by that bus. And she's like, come on, take my hand, take my arm. Let's go for a stroll. And he's like, oh, quids in. I have pulled. This is great. And then 10 meters down the street, she's going to be like, not only have you not pulled, you're dead.
I mean, that's probably the worst. That's just mean. they met that guy in the park earlier on and she said his name to him. And he was like, oh, you know me. It's like, ah, yeah, I'll see you later. So that was a weird kind of black humor on her part. But no, some of the scenes of death I thought were really charming. Like whenever the honeymooners, one of the husband dies, and immediately his first thought is, "Oh crap, but my wife doesn't know the passcode to my phone and all the ticket information. She needs to know this
I
very
liked
small piece of
that. He
information."
was selfless in that moment, you know.
But I mean, selfless and so myopic as well. Like the man had died. She's going to be grand. She's going to get home somehow. It'll be an inconvenience. But like, that was the major piece of information. It's not like, oh, I love you, darling. This is how much you meant to me and you made blah, blah, blah. Wasn't this
Yeah, but
huge
I think in a
thing? It
crisis,
was
people
just.
do focus on the little details, you know.
Oh, absolutely. That's a very like actual, genuine thing. It's like,
I
ah,
just,
well.
yeah, but I liked that he was worried about her not having the information. He wasn't like, oh, hold on, I don't want to be dead. He was like, oh, no, she's gonna miss her bus or something.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, could you imagine returning from the dead and just being like, my passcode to my phone is, and
you look one really, would
reverse
she need it? She would just take the phone, take his thumb, and
it.
unlock the phone. Excuse me, coroner, would you mind if I just grab his hand there for a second?
Beep. Also the fact that she didn't know the passcode as well. That's an odd one. I always thought couples just share this information.
Some do, some don't. I don't know.
Not even share, you're just in each other's company enough that it's just you know it. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think so. But anyway, they were new. So that's really the first story. Like, we see them going around. She teaches the dream a little bit more about just like human connections, I think. And it's kind of
She
heartwarming, and they have nice conversations, and she's a good influence on him.
teaches the dream that they are not gods above people, but they are there to serve.
They serve people, she says. Yeah.
So without the people, they would not have a purpose. And that is actually their purpose is just that function to facilitate humanity. That's pretty
Yeah.
much that in a nutshell.
There's really only one theme. There's two problems, okay? So I do like this, and I'm going to be pedantic here, but there's two problems. Number one is, so she's turning up when people die, but like in the last episode, for example, we saw
Oh
people
yeah.
just get butchered left, right, and center. Where was she? Where were you?
I mean, okay, so to defend that, I mean, the dream doesn't have to be there when somebody is, having a dream. He can just kind of like, he's just the anthropomorphic
Okay, but then
personification
why
of
is she going to
dreams.
them at all, Ben?
As she chooses to, she wants to. She's just kind of, maybe I'll drop in on this one. It's cozy. Yeah, it's when you start thinking about it too hard that it's kind of like, people died in front of the dream's glass prison.
There was
Magnus
times that
died.
she could have done something. Yeah. And she specifically is like, maybe did you ever stop to think? And he's like, I didn't think. He's like, I know you didn't think. Did you never stop to think that your little sister was worried about you? It's like, well, hold on. He was locked in a cage for like 20 years. Maybe more, like several
100 years.
100 years in the cage. So, you know, if you were worried about him, you could have gone to see him.
Yeah, I mean, two things did die there, and like his Raven and the Magnus both died in front of him, so she could have been at present there. But yeah, maybe just didn't think of it at the time.
I like your thinking. It's not like she could have gone to help her brother. It's like, you know, someone died in front of him. She could have helped him without even having to put in the effort to travel. Like, she was gonna be there already. You know, if you're gonna rescue your brother from a cage,
Oh,
get the
hey, what's
schedule and be like,
going
I'm
on?
in the area on this date, so that's the time to do it.
Mean, she didn't exactly show up and, just trying to avoid eye contact with her brother, with her naked brother.
Maybe that's why
She
she didn't
just
go. She's like, oh, God damn, all this weird naked sibling stuff. I'm just going to sit this one out.
knocking on the door and saying, "Are you decent? No, or I'll come back later."
Give you another 100 years, see how you're getting on. So, look, that's the
Right.
first story, and I liked it.
Yeah,
It
it was
was
pleasant. It was just Nothing to write home about. It wasn't exactly the most extravagant story.
Well, you say that, but I've got my pen and paper ready.
Oh, good. Well, fair enough. shut my face.
I really liked it, but the second one was better. We're probably agreed on that.
Yeah. So I feel like the first one was just kind of a thematic setup. So the dream is now having to deal with humility and realizing he has to deal with humanity. And this is kind of his first interaction or first steps into dealing with some introspective as well to understand himself.
For an immortal creature, he hasn't learned a lot about himself or others.
No. No, he's quite lofty. He's just kind of there. But I suppose like his most engaging interactions with humanity is through the dreams or when they're asleep.
Mm.
Could you imagine just trying to learn humanity just by watching a person who's asleep? It's like,
that's very fair. Boring. That's
they
fair.
Don't move around a lot, do they?
Now, before we get they to the like second the part, before we get to the second part, two little things. Number one, they never explain why the Raven isn't with them. And number two, the juxtaposition of her being so kind and thoughtful to these people who are about to die and just really talking them through it, holding their hand almost, just being so lovely with the time that he takes the bag of sand from the girl and just like, oh yeah, she's going to die the second I take this. Yoink. Love it.
Right, well, I'll leave now.
So on to the second story. It's the 30-minute one, 31, 2 minutes, something like that. We start with him outside this lovely old Tudor tavern that's fallen into disrepair and decay and has been sold for to be not dying or to be used, whatever. We find out later that it's going to be flats or something. But essentially this old kind of dilapidated Tudor building. And then he starts thinking back. And I suppose most of this episode is a memory, is a flashback. And
it's a very long flashback, yeah.
It's a 30-minute flashback. We go to 1389, and he's there with the same sister. And they go into a tavern, and he looks like Noel Fielding with his longer hair. And he's the only human in history that long hair made him look worse. And he goes in, and there's this one, you know, it's just a tavern with all these old yokels, you know, in the 1300s. One guy's boasting, like, I'm not going to die. Everyone else is dying, I'm not going to die. I've decided I'm not going to die. And so
it's even sorry to cut across you there. It's even more bizarre than that. He calls death stupid and death is standing right there. Like it's
right
kind of awkward. Yeah. So it's awkward. The dream looks offended. The dream, death looks, you know, kind of amused at the whole situation.
Mm. We never get her comeback on it though. So they make a wager. They say, let's make him live for 100 years and we'll see what he thinks. And she says, the dream says, okay, I'll tell him. We never get Death's input on this ever again. Like, what she thinks is the fact that he's lived all this time and that he hasn't died. She just appeared again. She's gone.
She might have loads of deals like this going on all over the place.
Bad guy Death, up to her old tricks.
Ah, yeah.
But basically, the dream says, I'll see you here in exactly 100 years. And this is immediately sad. Because there's this assumption that you'll have 100 years and you'll still be faffing about in this crappy old tavern in Yokel, England. You won't have visited anywhere else in the world. And he comes back in 100 years' time, and there's the guy faffing about in Yokel Tavern with his ale. Drinking ale and talking about women in an inappropriate manner.
So part of this wager is that in 100 years he will be begging for death.
As well, which, of course you would.
Like, what was the year that he first met? 1400s?
It was 1389, and then he meets him every 100 years on the same day.
So in 1389, they didn't exactly have the transportation to get around, you know, to get very far and do things.
True, but you wouldn't be in the same town. At least get on your horsey and go to the next town, you know. But anyway, he's in the same place, and he says, "No, I'm loving." And the dream thinks he's going to be like, you know, this is terrible. I want to die. And he's like, no, this is flipping brilliant. I'm still just drinking my ale and loving life. He's kind of, at this point, quite hedonistic. And the dream is surprised, and I'm surprised. And now I start to hate the guy because he's happy and loves life. And I just, you know, can't be dealing with that at all.
It makes perfect sense to me. I don't see the issue here. And now, I'm like, this is the point where I feel like this is kind of a reflection of I'm rooting for Hobbs, and you're rooting for the Dream. And
yes, I really empathize with the Dream here. He's like, you're going to hate life. The guy's like, no, I love it. He's like, but hi.
just enjoy it.
He was enjoying it, I suppose. He was drinking his ale and, besmirching the women folk. So they meet every 100 years. He meets him again in 1589 and 1689. I think it was 1689 that was the best. Because this guy's coming up in the world. Now he's a sir. And he has the big table. And I really like the tavern's getting a little bit fancier each time as the 100 years pass and they get out of the 1300s and into 1600s. Tavern's looking pretty opulent, a little bit fancier. And then I realized, hold on, the rest of the tavern looks the same. Rich guy Hobbs has just got this fancy old corner all to himself with a big banquet spread out and his fancy Tudor clothes. And he's got this nice bit. Nobody else has got anything fancy. I like that.
Guys, he's trying to show off to his friends.
He's at his big table. We also see it. There's one time where we see Shakespeare and Marlowe, and they send.
Is it Marlowe? Are they introduced? Is he introduced? As
it's going to be Marlowe because they're talking about Faust, and that's when Marlowe's writing Dr. Faustus. And he says that guy Shakespeare over there, he's kind of crappy, but his friend there's pretty good. So it's going to be Marlowe.
Okay.
But go listen to Playboys. But then the Dream talks to Shakespeare. They make some kind of deal. We never hear about that again. And that's that.
Well, the assumption there is that the Dream gave Shakespeare his skill and talent. And, we have the Dream to thank for Macbeth and all of that.
Well, he'd already written one play. So I wonder which play it was that he supposedly wrote without the Dream's help. Presumably, if it wasn't very good, it was, one of the Henrys. All of the Henrys. But, so that's what happens there. I liked that. I liked a little cameo from Shakespeare. And I like the big table and the 1600s and the fancy Tudor floats.
I thought that scene was very intense and sexually charged.
You thought that Shakespeare also thought he'd fooled, like the guy in the park earlier.
It was kind of intense. He just comes over and starts talking about dreams. And do you want this? Do you want that? He's like, I do. it's kind of, if a man walked over to me and started saying any of that stuff, it would be, I would assume there was some sort of maneuver game being played here.
I suppose so, yeah. Because the Dream never really tries to, fit in. He'll just walk over in the 1300s and kind of be like, so you want to live eternally, I will see you here again in 100 years. And everyone else is looking at him like, how's this weirdo? He makes no attempt to fit in.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody did that to me in a pub, it would be immediately dismissed.
Yeah, but somehow the guy knows. I don't know how. So they keep meeting, 1789. I think it's maybe around that time that he mentions that he has a wife and he's going to have a kid soon. But there's also one time where he gets involved in the slave trade and the Dream actually gets visibly annoyed and kind of this idea that the guy has been given this gift of eternal life but would spend that time making the much shorter lives of other people miserable and tells him, don't do that.
And as the first piece of advice, he argues back and says, well, you chose me, it's my life and I'm free to choose how to live it. And the Dream does fire back and say, so you would choose to take the choice away from other men.
Yeah, especially men who have much, much shorter times to live their life. That's what got me.
It's interesting that they would deal with something like that. Because it did happen. And obviously Hobbs is not a good guy. It's like, he's just a guy.
Yeah, and I feel like he doesn't learn a lot, so we get to Victorian times and there's some prostitute opens the door and, makes sexual
advances
is what I'm looking for, on the Dream. And then the guy's like, don't worry about her, we call her the hospital, I can't remember why, but he doesn't really care. And the Dream says, I actually know all this other information about her and she's had a really tough life since childhood and, she was raped and abandoned and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this guy's been in the pub with her all this time and not known any of that because he's very self-centered.
I suppose that you can't really fault him. He's just human. He's not supposed to be, one of your comments was, he's not getting any you know, as you get older, you're supposed to get wiser and more experienced, blah, blah, blah. But he's not getting any older.
But no, you don't get wiser because your body starts to decay. You get wiser because you've got more years of experience. The guy has lived for 500 years and is still not a great person. You know, you should be getting better.
Nah. He's not getting any worse. Let's put
Are you the optimist?
we established this a long time ago.
It's, yeah, prima facie, you think it's not that way around. But, yeah, I think this is the part where the guy says to the dream, you know, I think that you need a friend. You're lonely. And this is very true, very clearly true. The dream is looks like he's going to cry. And then he's just like, no, I do not need a friend. I will not come back in 100 years. I will prove you wrong. So, guys, when you're trying to make friends with people and they say, like, oh, look, you look, you know, like you need some company, you need a friend. Instead of saying, yes, self-evidently I do, I'm going to go away and be even more lonely for a longer period of time just to spite you for thinking that you could offer me friendship, you peasant.
It's just that very quiet, how dare you?
Just such a petulant emo child.
Look, I didn't meet you. Do you know something? I'm going to do that to a lot more people, though. Just very slowly. How dare you?
I didn't like the dream in this scene, but he knows less than this guy does. You know, and he's lived even longer.
Of course, he doesn't. Sorry, he has no idea how to make friends. Well, no, he knows how to make friends, but you know,
and then take the sand away from them as they die. So now we see. We're in the 1989. We get good music and good cars. And here comes the nice guy sitting at the tavern. You know, now the tavern's got like outdoor seats and it's looking quite modern. You know, it's a modern pub. And he's sitting there with some paperwork. And he gets stood up. The dream doesn't appear because obviously he's in the glass cage at this time with the Magus. And we think, oh, he didn't turn up. He doesn't want to be my friend. The times, they are sad. But they're happy because it's the 80s. So that's all nice. And then 100 years from now, we're back to the modern time period. I guess that would be 2089. So I guess I'm just realizing the show's set a little bit in the future for the first time.
Well, I don't think there was that much of a time jump, was there?
It must have been, though. The guy's in the tavern waiting for him.
I thought it was just, it skipped to present day.
Theoretically, but the guy's waiting for him in the tavern and says, you're late. Like it's...
No, I'm going to have to go back on that one.
Is it set in the future? Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
No, it's set in present day and he just happens to find him.
But he goes there and the place is marked for demolishment. But there's a sign that says, there's a new inn around the corner. So they go around to this just standard looking modern kind of corner pub. And the guy's in there sitting down, and then they smile, and the dream, he's like, oh, you're late. And he's like, oh, I heard it's impolite to be late for my friends. And then it's like, they're friends. Aww. And it's very nice, and they sit down, and I guess they're going to have a wee chat, and they're going to be friends. They're still going to see each other every 100 years, and the dream never checks in with what the guy's getting up to between them. So he just appears and it's like, well, what's been happening for the last 100 years? And one time he's like, oh, I lost all my fortune and everything's terrible and I've had 80 years of absolute misery. And he's like, oh, right. Like, he doesn't ever check in during that time.
That's very sad. Yeah, he's definitely not there as a friend, you know, to help him through the hard times. Like, I couldn't imagine crashing on the dream's couch.
No.
Like, hey, I'm just passing through. Would you mind if I could crash your house? I don't know what capacity of a friend he actually is. He never asks anything about his history or anything like, hey, what are you
I think that
like?
Going forward, they will now be friends. We'll never see that again. But it seems like they've got a good vibe at the end of the episode, you know? But what we missed is there's a small detail, which is the one time that everything's going badly. The dream thinks, now he definitely will want to continue. And the guy's like, no, there's still so many things I want to do. It'll start to look up eventually. Things will look up presently. That's what one of the Dickens characters always says. Things will look up presently. And they do.
Now, something
and I hated
I didn't
him
realize.
In that moment.
Oh, come on.
What did you
did
not realize?
Get better for him. It's not for others.
What did you realize?
What? No, one thing that I realized, and it didn't bother me. I've watched this twice now. It didn't bother me the first time, but the second time, the source material has the comic books. They, as they're walking through the pub for the first time, they're passing by a lot of conversations and people are talking about lots of things. There's a conversation about somebody saying, guarantee it's going to be the end of the world soon. Somebody else is telling a very rude joke. And there's just a lot of conversation happening. In the comic books, they actually have the exact same conversations happening in the pub that the dream is in present day. And the same sort of rude jokes that are happening as well. And I guess it just shows...
It's a nice touch.
It's in the comics, it's a nice touch that you can actually hold two panels side by side and read, you know, in more modern English and in old English, the same basic things. And I suppose the message there is that even though things, technology and all that is changing, we're still essentially the same people deep down. And that's why we always end up in the same pub year after year after century after century.
Oh, one other detail we forgot. Constantine appears.
Oh, yeah.
Because
For
a minute. But in one of the scenes, they start to think, oh, what's going on with this creepy guy that appears every 100 years to make deals with people? Don't really know how they figure that out, but someone sketches them one time, and then 100 years later, she finds them and she wants to be immortal, and then they have a little fight and it just kind of stops. Nothing really happens there.
No, the dream kind of sits there, and then Hobbs jumps up and throws, you know, tea into somebody's face, smashes a cup in somebody else's head.
She holds a little stiletto out of him at one point. But it's nice to see posh ancestress of Kick-Ass Lady.
I think ancestor is fine.
Ancestrix?
No, definitely not.
By grammar rules, anything that ends in OR should be Rix. Like a female doctor should be a doctrix.
But we don't have doctorates, though. We have doctors.
No, but we used to say doctress, and they would put an ESS. But technically, that's a grammatical anomaly, because that's for ER words, not OR words. So an executor of your estate is an executrix.
I refuse your language and substitute my own.
The plural is executrices, which is very difficult to say. So
ancestors, fine.
The episode ends... Ancestresses. The episode ends with the other guy who ended the female, or whatever it was, who ended the last episode, just pops up again to end this episode in a Tower of Desire. Do you want to say some words about that? Because I don't know about that.
It's Desire. It's the little sister of... Again? It's the little sister of the dream.
It's what seems more intimidating.
She doesn't do anything.
She's just in a tire, doing like ha ha
of herself, because she's very vain and she just desires herself.
I can empathize with that.
Herself, their self, they're actually androgynous because they desire to be both genders. They're just incredibly greedy. There's not actually a lot said about this person, and even when they're the highlight of an episode, nothing is actually mentioned. It's actually quite weird.
At this point, they've appeared twice for 30 seconds at the end of an episode, just to kind of be like, there's a reason to watch next time, and then they weren't in it until the end again. It's like,
but next time... Disco Glasses must have been this one.
Disco Glasses has not appeared in a long time. I'm starting to wonder what the show is. I've realized 6 episodes in the particular swindle, which is that each episode is almost unrelated, apart from the Sandman, but he's not even the main character. And we just get a lot of different stories and introduce me to people I care about. And then the Magus and Good Guy John and the Kick-Ass Chick and the Blonde Lady and everyone all just disappear.
I think it's the next episode where we actually start into an actual storyline that spans a few episodes.
Okay.
So it's kind of a weird MacGuffin move, but it happens.
It's a weird show, but I will say that because this episode had no nonsense and... Okay, the guy's living forever, I guess. That's kind of mystical or whatever. But apart from that, it's just a tale of people. And that made this the most straightforward episode and by far my favorite episode.
Fair enough.
It was a good one.
It's a very pleasant one. It's not my favorite episodes of the lot, but
I don't know why the Raven wasn't there, though. There really needs to be an explanation for that.
Because he would have ruined it.
He would have ruined the lovely conversation between brother and sister, but I'm just wondering if there's like a storyline reason, you know? Or just like, oh goodness, this character's trash. We can't have him here.
Maybe he was there the entire time, just off camera. He just didn't know.
I don't know.
Or maybe he was there with the pigeons, eating bread.
Well, this is the first even-numbered episode that I've liked.
Yes, I suppose so.
There's that. What's the next episode?
I can't remember exactly. It might be we're starting into see a character called Rose, who has some very weird stuff going on with herself. Yeah, I do enjoy this saga.
Well, this was a nice episode. The last one was very, very weird. And didn't really fit the overall show, to be honest. It was just a weird anomaly of a violent, strange episode.
It was bizarre. I really enjoyed the last one, though. It was really violent. I was expecting it to be violent. That cafe scene, it was done much quicker in the comic books, and it was a lot stranger, I suppose. The pacing kind of just juttered in the last one, but no, I'm quite happy with the pacing of this episode. Well,
I'm just starting to realize that the episodes don't all connect together necessarily. But anyway, I think that is all we have to say about episode 6.
Yeah, I've got nothing else to add. It was just very humble.
Go and engage in slumber. Slumber Party Massacre, we talked about that. Watch that film. Don't watch that. And listen to Playboys and have a sleepy day.
Sweet dreams, everyone.
And then we come for you in your dreams.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.